Good morning from WKYT News. I'm Bill Bryant. We welcome you to Kentucky Newsmakers. Later, former UK great and NBA basketball player Rex Chapman on recovering from addiction. Chapman has co-written a book about his struggles. It is called It's Hard for Me to Live with Me. That's later. But first, the clock is counting down as the Kentucky legislative session is hitting its home stretch. Lawmakers still need to set a two-year budget. There are pushes for several other pieces of legislation to be passed before the General Assembly adjourns. Senate Majority Leader Damon Thayer has been in the middle of the action during the last regular session for him. Thayer is not seeking re-election this year and is moving on. We'll ask him about that. But first, we welcome Leader Thayer. We appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Bill. It's always great to be on your show.
What is it like in the final days of the session when the members suddenly realize that, time may run out before they get their bill across the line?
Frantic. Everybody's a little frantic. Things have really sort of stepped up in tempo this week. And everybody, advocates, lobbyists, legislators, staff, we all have a little bit more anxiety. Everybody's a little more frantic as we're all watching the clock, and you realize what it takes for a bill to go through the system. And you know, Bill, it shouldn't be easy to make new law. And some people get frustrated at the process. You know, I sort of thrive on the process, and it's not supposed to be easy. You may have a great idea, but the Founding Fathers set it up that you've got to get a majority of other people in two chambers to buy into it before it can become a law.
One bill that has really been through the process, as you say, is the House Bill 5, known as the Safer Kentucky Act, and there's been a lot of discussion about that. It changes several laws in the state. It's a 76-page bill. Some have said, why does it have to be so comprehensive as to include very serious crimes and then homeless camping?
It's a really good question, and the answer is there are many of us who feel over the last 10 years that we've gotten too soft on crime, that this whole right on crime, smart on crime movement has moved us a little bit past the middle and over onto the left side of the political spectrum, and we've seen a spike in crime, not just in our cities, although we know that there is an increase in crime here in Lexington, and especially in Louisville, and rural crime is up. A lot of it is driven by drugs. In Louisville, we have a gang-related problem. People know that because of the softening in our juvenile crime code, that they can go to these minors to do crimes for them. And the response has been a year-long effort by the Louisville delegation, where the crime has really hit home, especially downtown, to get tough on crime again and to swing the pendulum back a little bit.
There's been a lot of discussion, though, about that homelessness issue. Why wrap that up into this?
I think the bill sponsors feel like it all sort of goes together. The drugs, the crime, the homelessness kind of all go together. It's a big problem in Louisville. I go over there a lot. I go to the races at Churchill Downs. A lot of great restaurants over there that I like to go to. I go to concerts a lot at the Yum Center and the Palace, and you can see it. And we've got a homeless issue here in Lexington, but it's worse in downtown Louisville, and I think that downtown merchants and business owners feel like it's a real impediment to people coming into the downtown business district. It has led to an increase in crime. And I think they felt like it needed to be wrapped up into one. There are still ongoing negotiations on that homelessness piece of it, but it's not good when you get visitors from around the country who come in for the Kentucky Derby or Thunder over Louisville or to go on the Bourbon Trail in downtown Louisville, and your downtown is filled with homeless camps. It's not a good look.
But
people don't feel safe.
But you're throwing individuals in jail if it goes this way.
Well, we'll see if that's going to be in the final version of the bill. That's all still under negotiation. Biggest thing for me is three strikes and you're out. Violent crime, three strikes, you're out, you're going to jail.
The most important piece of legislation, of course, is a two-year budget. There are three proposals out there, the governor's, the House budget, and the Senate is working on its own spending plan. What will emerge?
Well, by the time this airs on Sunday morning, the Senate version of the budget will be revealed. It will get through committee and have passed the Senate. The House will have received it. They will not concur, and then we will get together and form a conference committee that will start this coming week. And I have to be honest with you. I really like a lot of what the House did in its budget. And from my point of view, the Senate didn't make big wholesale changes. They left a lot of things out that they then sort of tossed to us to put in the budget. And, you know, they sort of telegraphed that to us. And so we added a lot of those things that they wanted. But I think at the end of the day, people are going to look at it and say it's a fiscally responsible, disciplined budget. And for me, I want to make sure that this budget puts us on a path to hit the next triggers. So 2 years from now, when I'm not in the legislature, the tax rate gets cut down to 3.5%, and I can say I helped do that.
Is that more important to you than what many say might be an opportunity to make some investments in some other programs and projects?
Yes, it is, but we are going to make some very targeted investments throughout the state, and I think people are going to be pretty pleased by that. But I think it's most important to let the people of Kentucky keep more of what they earn.
Do you think, Senator, that any kind of a child care legislation will get through? As you know, Senator Denny Carroll has this proposal. It's a massive bill, $300 million. Is anything that ambitious likely to pass?
No. We're not going to drop $300 million into child care. But I do think a substantial amount of money will be appropriated in the final version of the budget to help the child care industry that was decimated by Governor Beshear's policies during the pandemic lockdowns.
Do you believe the legislature will pass some kind of bill that provides some exceptions to the state's near total abortion ban when it comes to rape and incest?
I don't. We don't have the votes for it.
The legislature recently overrode the governor's veto of a bill that said local governments cannot ban discrimination based on how renters get their money to pay their rent, most of the time federal programs. Why did you find that to be an instance where Frankfurt needed to usurp local laws?
Good. It's a good question. Normally I believe in local control, but sometimes local governments can go too far. And what Lexington tried to do was force landlords into taking Section 8 vouchers for rent and forcing them to take a lower amount than what they were charging for market. Historically, Section 8 vouchers were voluntary. Landlords can choose to take Section 8 tenants to help fill out various spots in their apartment complexes. But this would have mandated that they would have to take less than market. And that's basically a violation of the personal property rights that are enshrined in our Constitution and Bill of Rights. And we didn't think it was right to force landlords to take those vouchers and force them to essentially sell their property via rents at a discount. It's just, that's un-American.
Only the state's two largest cities had such ordinances in place. Did that get any consideration, or did you feel that others might pass such a bill?
No, the opposite. What we're seeing is liberal city councils in the biggest cities across America are trying to spread this mandatory Section 8 housing voucher program, and we wanted to make sure that it didn't spread to Kentucky.
Why did you decide that this term would be your last?
You know, Bill, I just felt that at the end of my term, 22 years would be enough for me. I felt like I had a longer shelf life. I felt very confident that if I had run, I would get reelected. And I just couldn't make another five-year commitment to doing the job. And I didn't want to be one of those people who runs for a four-year term and then quits in the middle of it. So I decided that for me, it would be better to leave a little too soon than to stay a little too long. I don't want to be one of those people who sticks around too long. You see it in politics, you see it with CEOs, you see it with entertainers, you see it with sports stars. I didn't want to be one of those people. I'm 56 years old. I think I've still got plenty of good working years left, and I want to return to the private sector for a while and do some other things that are of interest to me, mostly in the horse racing and bourbon sectors, but I'm open to all options, and we'll see what comes my way.
All options, including the return to the public realm, possibly.
Yes, right? I don't want to rule anything out. There is an open seat for governor coming up in a few years that I would certainly take a look at, depending on how the field shapes up, and who knows what else could open up out there, Bill, and I certainly don't want to rule anything out at this time.
All right, Senator, by your own admission, there you have some bills that you have proposed that you say are statement bills. You do not expect them to pass. You don't expect to spend a lot of energy trying to push them. One is a pay raise for lawmakers.
Yes, I'm not going to push the bill. I don't feel it will pass, but this quaint, old-fashioned notion that we are a part-time legislature is completely bogus. If you do the job right, it's a full-time job with part-time pay. You have to take time away from your regular job or your business or businesses, and it's a real challenge. And when I saw some of these folks in the House who were leaving after this year, Democrats and Republicans who have only been here one or two terms, and they told me it just doesn't make any financial sense, I thought, this could turn into a trend. You know, it's no big deal when someone like me leaves. 22 years, I've done my time. And there's a couple others like Derek Graham and John Schickel. We've done our time. It's time for us to move along. But when you see people leaving after one or two terms and they say that they just can't make it work financially, I think I wanted to make a statement on my way out the door that legislators should be paid more and that we should probably move past this quaint little notion of a part-time legislature.
Schools couldn't start until September 1st and under another of your bills. Is it important to you that you give kids the summer?
Or yes.
What is the, yeah.
Again, I'm not going to push the bill, but I did file a bill that says that school can't start until after September 1. I don't think it's a good thing for kids or educational attainment or for families to have kids start in late July, early August. Energy costs rise. Then these schools, you know, a few weeks after they get in, they take a fall break, which I'm not a big supporter of fall break. Let's get the kids in school after Labor Day, go straight on through till Thanksgiving break, Christmas break, Easter break, and be done by Memorial Day. There's a lot of states that still do that. Again, I don't want everybody freaking out. I'm not going to push the bill because I know the superintendents, heaven forbid, we try to tell them what to do with their school calendar while we give them billions in educational funding, but I digress.
Well, but you bring it up, so you know, you do not think the budget will guarantee raises for teachers, right?
No, because several years ago, superintendents asked us to let that be a local decision. What people got to realize is teachers are not state employees. They are employees of the local school districts. And so the superintendent said, please give us more money through the SEEK formula and let the superintendents and the local school boards decide how big the raises are and who they go to in terms of certified and classified employees. And we're going to do that. There will be an increase in the SEEK formula, and there will be more money that they can then give for raises. And 95% of school districts did give raises in the last biennium, and we're going to end up fully funding transportation. We agreed with the House on their proposal on that. So we're going to put more money into public education.
Senator, as you know, your own superintendent in Scott County, Billy Parker, has been on record as saying there is not enough money to provide significant raises.
Well, that's just something he and the school board are going to have to work with, because every house in Scott County has been appraised at about 33% more in value than it was the year before by our PVA. It's happening everywhere. We're seeing these inflationary increases in home prices, which means our local taxes are going up, and that means the property taxes are going to go to the school district, and they have ways that they can find the money.
What amendments do you want to see on the ballot in November?
I want to see House Bill 2, the constitutional amendment that will allow for parental school choice in Kentucky. I want to see that, and I'd like to see the constitutional amendment that would move gubernatorial elections to even-numbered years. I'd love to see that on the ballot.
That's your highest priority ones.
Yes, and then there's another one that Senator Jason Howell sponsored that makes it clear in the Constitution that non-U.S. citizens are not allowed to vote in our elections.
All right. Thanks for coming. We appreciate it very much. And, you know, we'll get you again before you leave office, right?
I hope so. I've lost count of how many times I've been on, and I always enjoy it,
well,
Bill.
Well, the same. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
And stay with us. Rex Chapman will be here in just a moment on Kentucky Newsmakers.
Welcome back to WKYT's Kentucky Newsmakers. It's a New York Times bestseller as former UK and NBA basketball star Rex Chapman has co-written a memoir. It's revealing, it pulls no punches. Chapman dazzled the crowds at UK before he became the first player drafted by the Charlotte Hornets and spent a dozen seasons in the NBA. But before the opioid crisis came to dominate the news, Chapman developed an addiction that saw him at one point taking up to 50 painkillers a day. He developed a gambling habit as well, eventually lived in his car and shoplifted to fuel his habit. Then he turned his life around and is now a social media influencer who enjoys his new life. Rex Chapman joining us today. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me, Bill, always.
Interesting to have this book out. You have been one who has seen literally the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And yet you have titled your memoir, "It's Hard for Me to Live with Me." What does that mean?
I think... for me, it's, you know, just a lot of guilt and shame over choices, decisions I made in life, over not standing up for myself more when I was younger, and not addressing the issues that I had with depression and mental illness as a young person. I was always sort of fearful that, hey, they might put me on medication, and I don't know if that's going to jibe well with my basketball playing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just a lot of regret.
What's been the reaction to this book?
It's been overwhelmingly positive, which has caught me completely off guard. I assumed everyone would hate it and hate me for, you know, some of the details. And when I say that, I'm from Kentucky. I'm a Kentuckian. I grew up in Owensboro. Right. I went to the University of Kentucky. I played there for 2 years. But the University of Kentucky, when I was in school, was not very good to me. I talk about the NIL a little bit, and the reason I talk about that, the NIL came out, and now it's kind of given people like myself and some others that were always being paid under the table, kind of a new lease on life. We've been keeping secrets for a long time. Secrets aren't good for me. When I got to UK, Mark Higgs was the star running back on the football team. Mark and I grew up together in Owensboro, and I dated his younger sister, Sean. We were high school sweethearts. People didn't like us dating. She's black, I'm white. We kind of hit it in Owensboro for a couple years, and then we got to UK, and Sean was a track star too. She was a two-time 100-meter track champion in the state of Kentucky her junior and senior year. When I got to Kentucky, we went to class together one day, and I was called in the coach's office by Eddie Sutton, and he told me, "Listen, I don't care. We don't care, but if you're going to see Sean, you guys need to do that at nighttime or behind closed doors. We don't need it to be public." And I thought it was a joke. And when I say this, I almost cry every time, because it wasn't a joke. And instead of getting up and walking out or saying, "You guys are crazy," I said, "Yes, sir." And that... different forms of that conversation happened another half dozen times or so while I was at Kentucky, and it bothered me on so many different levels, but it was just mean in one respect, in that the people telling me to not date her had never met her. So it was just purely a racism issue.
So do you think people will be surprised at what all is in this book, what all is covered? They know about the addiction, the struggle, the rebound, but there are many other elements to your life they will learn about.
I'm sure. You know, I've struggled with anxiety my whole life, social anxiety. When I'm around people that I don't know, it's very uncomfortable. That's something I've learned to do, but I wasn't very good at it when I was 18 years old. 18, 19, 25, I was still not very good at it. You know, I had some issues that really and truly at 18, I wish I would have been able to walk out of that meeting with Eddie Sutton and into a therapist. I was lost, and I was angry, I was sad, and everything basketball-wise was going just fine, you know. That was, I don't want to say it was easy. It was easy for me. It was kind of natural. But that really was a sanctuary for me. I loved playing for the University of Kentucky. I loved being on that court. I loved my teammates. The other thing that was very confusing for me was many, if not most of my teammates at the time, were dating white girls. Why was that okay and this wasn't? And that's still, I still don't understand. It just, it made for a very awkward time while I was here. I probably wasn't on campus more than 18 months.
Again, a lot to learn. What was your lowest point? We all know you made tens of millions of dollars in the NBA, and you blew a lot of it. But then turned things around. So, how did it happen?
Man, I don't know. You know, I probably had so many low points that I just covered up with, you know, gambling and the opioids. Some that I probably don't even remember real well. But being arrested. I shoplifted. That's really hard for me to wrap my head around. I have to blame the drugs, because if not the drugs, then I'm morally a bad guy. I would have never, ever. OxyContin, opioids, painkillers are really, it's a really slippery slope. And that was, you know, being... My friends had been telling me for years, you know, my ex-wife, Bridget, who's amazing. She raised our four amazing kids. She raised them. I played with them. She told me for years. She begged with me, you know, get some help. It wasn't until I was arrested and on the front of every newspaper that I thought, well, hey, you've really screwed this up. Better try to make it better.
The comeback has been real. I know it was not easy. And it continues.
Yes, it does.
Right?
Yes, it does. Once you've run off the rails with your life, because most people tend to keep their lives on the rails. And when you've shown yourself that you can run off, at least for me, I'm very cautious, because I don't want to run off the rails again. And I have enough people in my life that keep an eye on me to help hold me accountable.
These days you're very active on social media. You often make uplifting posts. You make posts about social justice and some of the issues you've even discussed here. Why is it important for you now to use your platform and speak out?
You know, I don't want... When I was 16, Mitch McConnell was elected to the Senate. He was a freshman senator. And I didn't like much of what Mitch stood for. Mitch is a brilliant man. He's had an amazing career. A brilliant guy. I don't like his policies. I never have. I disagree with most all of his stuff. Knowing what I know now, at 17 years old, I would have said, I'm going to the University of Louisville unless Mitch McConnell resigns from the Senate. And I think it would have saved it. That might not have mattered, but think about if Reed Shepard said that right now. Look, I'm going to Louisville if Mitch McConnell doesn't resign. And he's going to resign, it sounds like. But I think it would have saved this country 40 years of really tough stuff.
A couple of minutes left. What do you think of this year's version of the Kentucky Wildcats? They're coming on at the right time, aren't they?
Yes. Love this team. Don't want this season to end. Talked about Reed for a second. His mom and dad, I've known them forever. The way that he has, Reed has really exploded this year is a surprise to everybody except myself. Ask his mom and dad. I've believed in Reed's ability from the time I saw him play for the first time. He's just perfectly wired to be a basketball player, and he's a great teammate.
And you see similarities in play, right?
Well, I see similarities. I see a lot of similarities in play with his mom and dad. Reed's a great athlete. He can really shoot. He's better than all of us were. He can handle. He can pass. He's just the epitome of a teammate. I don't know if my ego could have handled handled being the best player and coming off the bench all year long.
You mentioned NIL and how it's changing the college landscape for the better, you think?
Yes. Right now, it's a circus. It's a disaster. There are no rules. Something has to give, though. Look, they've been paying people. Schools, top 25 schools, have been paying guys under the table for decades. It's never been amateurism. Kentucky basketball has always been professional basketball. It's just amateurism is what the NCAA called it.
Rex Chapman, his book is It's Hard for Me to Live with Me, a memoir. It's a bestseller, and it is out there and available just about anywhere anybody wants to, yep, to pick it up. And I'm sure if you run across folks, you'll gladly sign it for them.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Bill.
We'll be back. We'll wrap up Kentucky Newsmakers in a moment. We appreciate you joining us for this edition of Kentucky Newsmakers. Colby Hall from SOAR will be one of our guests next week as we'll be talking about the progress in Eastern Kentucky and the Appalachian region. That's Kentucky Newsmakers for this week. Thank you for joining us. Make it a good week ahead.